Good afternoon. We're going to get started. I have a packed session. I hope that I don't keep you away from your lunch for sure. So let me do a quick introduction. I'm Sam. I have been in the Active Directory team since the day I joined Microsoft in 1998, starting from Windows Server 2000, where we introduced the first Active Directory. And one of the coolest moments for me during that period was before we released Windows 2000, we moved all our BDCs and PDCs over to Windows 2000 and turned on our functional level for Windows 2000 the first time in our Microsoft environment. It was pretty late at night. We were in the data center room and actually had it done. That's some good memories as part of being with Active Directory. So currently, I focus a lot on Active Directory Federation services, which I've been driving for the last six, 7 years or so, and been involved even earlier. And today, our session is really going to be focused on what does the modern world really throw at us in terms of problems, and how we within the Active Directory think about this. Now, you saw probably within the abstract where we focused a little bit on Active Directory Federation services, which will be a lot of focus in this session. But we chose the title as being a broader Active Directory because it really doesn't matter whether it's on-prem Active Directory or our Azure Active Directory. We essentially think about some of the paradigms in terms of BYOD in very similar fashions. So while the focus of this session is going to be Active Directory Federation services, I will be touching a little about how we think about our investments in Azure Active Directory as well, especially in light of some of the announcements you heard for Office 365 MDM, because Azure Active Directory drives the, behind the scenes, it drives most of the conditional access associated with that. So let me get started. Now, from a modern world, what we see is more and more where resources are spread across a wide variety of places, company resource, organizational resources, and being accessed from a variety of devices. It doesn't matter if these are on-premises resources where you have applications or in a private cloud, for example, between Azure IaaS or within Amazon, or a public cloud consuming services from Microsoft, such as Office 365, or third-party SaaS applications. Now, there's a variety of these resources being accessed from these devices. And these devices are not just Windows PCs anymore. They are Windows PCs, they are phones, they are tablets from iOS, Android. There are so many of these devices. So when we think about it especially, how it's all about enabling productivity. But at the same point in time, how do we manage securing that access? How do we provide better comfort for people who are responsible for the security of these resources to feel good about saying, I have the right mechanism to make sure the access to my company resources is secure? And that is our focus, where we try to balance a blend of both thinking about enabling users on one hand to access these resources in the way so that it's flexible for them. It doesn't matter whether they are in a coffee shop or they are at work. And ensuring, and from an IT perspective, is essentially about how do we enable things like stronger authentication, things like make sure my access control is good to secure the access to my resources. Let me start with introducing how we think about conditional access control. Conditional access control from an Active Directory perspective is split up into two core portions, where we think about centralized access control, where when you are accessing a resource, you have a single way to think about that policy, or perhaps even more access control within an application itself, where the application has the right attributes that it understands to make the right decisions. A good example is that I do not want to allow download of documents if I'm accessing from a non-compliant device from the extranet. That's a good example of how potentially one could think about fine-grained access control. Now, when we see access control, we see there are a wide variety of factors. One is essentially thinking about the user themselves. Now, the user could belong to a specific department. They can belong to specific security groups. And you want to control access based on these types of user attributes. In addition, a user may have logged on without a multi-factor, two-factor credential, or they may have logged on with a two-factor credential. That helps differentiate whether they get access potentially to sensitive resources. The next portion of our factoring is essentially where, with the explosion of devices, how do you really think about bringing on devices as a core portion of access control? A common thing that whenever I talk to customers is really about thinking about, hey, I really want to provide access. I don't mind providing access, but I need that device to be managed, and I need to be compliant with my organization's policies, and that's essentially what I would like in terms of when I provide access. Bringing that paradigm in is a core part of our thinking, and I'll explain more in detail and how we do this with more details later. The next factor is really thinking about the application. All applications are built the same way. Some applications do not require authentication because they're public knowledge. You want to allow access. Some applications just need very simple, are you an authenticated user from my company to allow access? Some applications are sensitive, where you want to bring additional factors associated with the user, with the device, with the location, to be able to provide access. So we also bring in the notion of saying you get to decide based on what the application is and not try to kind of employ a blanket policy. It's all about that flexibility that we want to think in terms of conditional access control. The final aspect is really about network location. It is so common where people differentiate between how policies are determined when an end user is accessing from inside the network versus outside the network. Why? People have more security controls associated with a network, which have been very traditional patterns for a lot of organizations. Now, in addition, there are very interesting cases because we hear about, especially in Europe, actually, some documents can be accessed from a certain country, but the same document cannot be accessed from another country. So those are all the types of paradigms that we want to think about as we think about the broader framework of conditional access control. Let me throw a few examples. Now, the first one is essentially really focusing on what I mentioned earlier is about providing, saying, how do I restrict to a set of resources if you're coming from a managed and a compliant policy? Now, the first portion is, hey, it's an employee. It's a corporate device that is managed. I can recognize that. And it's compliant with my policies. My virus protection is there. My anti-malware is installed and running fine. There, I've got BitLocker enabled. There's a bunch of these that define these policies. Or an organization may also think about it as really thinking about employees accessing from their personal devices. Now, this varies because some organizations view it as personal devices don't get access to company data. Some organizations say personal devices that are managed, that I can exert control over so that I can protect my data, is okay to access that resource. Or it could be essentially some organizations think about it really doesn't matter. It's not a factor that's out there. So that's one form of an example. Now let's also think about another example where the concept of an unknown device is that, hey, especially when I'm thinking about exposing resources that are internet accessible, think of most of our cloud services fall into that paradigm. But I want to make sure that if you are from outside, it could be any random machine on the internet. I want to make sure at least it's a device that I know, that I can recognize, and as a result, I can provide access. If that device is unknown, I want to ensure that you at least proved through some multi-factor authentication that you are who you say you are, so that I can make sure that of that before I provide access. So in this case, the device is not known. The end user has not performed multi-factor authentication, so we want to deny access. Now, however, if I did perform a multi-factor authentication, I want to provide access to that application. So these are essentially so many kinds of policies. Now, a key aspect, especially when you think about mobility, is that I think I've lost my phone at least twice in the last 4 years. My wife really complains about that. But at the same point in time, that's a common occurrence. Now, it's scary for an organization that says, what happens when an employee loses their device? What we want to make sure is that if you've lost that device and you've reported to the company, that your application access is essentially blocked. So as a result, we want to make sure that we can shut off access to resources that you were previously accessing from that device. Now, ultimately, with device management, you get into more paradigms where you can essentially control even the data or through selective wipe, remote wipe. Those are other device management capabilities that are available in the market from vendors such as Intune or other MDM vendors as well. Now, ultimately, it leads to some form of a user experience because the user wants to know why didn't they get access. And we also think about that as a core aspect in terms of being able to provide guidance to users saying that, hey, we don't want to create a help desk call. Just be clear to the end user why you didn't have access. Those are the types of concepts that we essentially think about as we embrace that notion of application resources being available in all areas, between the cloud, in my on-premises, it really doesn't, in a third-party cloud service, in a Microsoft cloud service. We want to ensure that we can provide a common identity fabric that gives end users the flexibility to access these resources, as well as provides IT with the right controls to secure that access. So, a very quick thing, we enabled made significant enhancements in 2012 R2, especially in Active Directory Federation Service, where we combined the notion of both enabling access to on-premises resources and securing them with these paradigms in mind. From a perspective of device, user, authentication, as well as network location. So in this example, I'm just kind of giving a very quick perspective of saying whether you have applications inside the network or in the cloud, perhaps, you can protect them both from publishing the application through the web application proxy that we introduced in 2012 R2 and subsequently providing gating that access in a secure manner, and also providing single sign-on experiences. Now, before I get started and I dive into really thinking about Active Directory Federation Service and Windows Server 2012 R2, and even perhaps talk about what's up in the horizon for us late in the session today, I wanted to focus and give a little bit of perspective about the new announcement for Office 365 MDM. Now, our first wave in terms of enabling this with working with the Office team and the Intune team was really about thinking about mobility. It is about these users having a wide variety of devices and accessing Office resources and providing the security controls associated with that. I'm not going to spend too much time on this, but I'm going to focus a little bit of how does that access control work so that you get an understanding of it. And as I dive into more details, you'll kind of get a better perspective. So our first wave that we're introducing in Q1 in 2015 calendar year is where you can provide an integrated management experience within the Office portal where you can say, I require the devices that access my Office resources from all of these rich applications that I provide to access Office resources to be secure, to come from a secure device that is managed and is compliant with the policies that I set. A simple example is a PIN has been established on that device. Now, the types of applications that we are focusing in that first wave is, it's very common to use Exchange Active Sync to access email, and we will support that across iOS, Android, Windows Phone, as well as the Windows 8.1 devices as well. Now, Similarly, we also, OneDrive is a very common application so that I can have access to my business documents. We also add support where we will not give you access unless you are coming from a device that is managed and compliant. We also have support for mobile Outlook web access, which gives you the ability to also access email, but not from the EAS client. It has a better experience in some of these devices, so end users might want to use that to consume their email. As well as the core Office suite that was released for Office for iPad as well as Android, so that irrespective, if I open up Word, PowerPoint, Excel, accessing a document in my OneDrive folder or in SharePoint online, I have a great conditional access and secure experience. There's much more details in terms of how this is at the B330 session, which I believe is tomorrow. Where you can get more details on this. However, before, I'm going to focus a little bit on what that experience and how it potentially works. Now, imagine that I try to access email from a device. Now, at this point in time, my device is not managed, and so I get a quarantine message saying that, hey, your administrator requires you to enroll the device and activate this device so that you can access your mail through EAS clients. This is exactly the native EAS client, perhaps in iOS or in Android. It really doesn't matter. And once you do that, I'm going to walk you through how that flow is. The first is that the end user tries to look up to provide, to connect up to the Exchange Online. Now, at that point in time, Exchange Online says, okay, I have this EAS ID. Let me go ask Azure Active Directory saying that, do you know about this device and is it compliant? And Azure Active Directory says, no, it isn't. So as a result, Exchange Online goes and the EAS server goes and pushes the device into a quarantine mode and sends the mail quarantine email out to the end user. Now, this could happen if your device went out of compliance as well. And once that happens, the end user now registers behind the scenes with Intune, and where you have a unified enrollment, and we also call this where we establish the ability to recognize your device in a consistent manner that works everywhere when you're accessing resources. So at this point in time, we enroll the device, we provide it an identity, and store that in Azure Active Directory so that we can recognize this device in future interactions. That happens, and as part of activating, I say, my EAS ID is essentially associated with this device. And with that, we are able to establish a relationship between these two. And once that happens, we have a fundamental basis of establishing a device identity within the directory that we can use across a wide variety of aspects of access. Finally, we check the compliance, and once the compliance is met, the directory says the device is compliant, and as a result, we provide access. Now, this is an interesting flow because Exchange ActiveSync is slightly different, so we have a slightly different flow for that. Now, similarly, you could be on a device that is essentially a very similar experience associated with a OneDrive app that's available on iOS. So the notion is I try to access the resource, I am denied access, and I'm pointed out to say, you need to enroll the device. I click on a link, and as a result, I get my device enrolled. I ensure that I'm meeting my company's policies. For example, I might be asked to set a PIN. Now, let's walk through what that flow looks like. So when I'm trying to get the documents, the SharePoint says, hey, you need an access token from Azure AD. And at that point in time, we try to authenticate. And you might be federated, or you might just use our cloud accounts. And once I'm authenticated, we essentially try to see, OK, can we recognize the device as well around that? And once, if it is a non-compliant device, we will immediately provide saying that, sorry, I can't give you access to that document or SharePoints because the device is not compliant. And click here for more details, which will take you to a web page that will give you an experience to enroll your device. Now, once I enroll the device and I'm compliant, as a result, we issue the access token. Now, imagine if I started from EAS and then moved on to OneDrive for Business. Because we think about the device as a consistent pattern in the directory, I'm just provided access. So that's the broad perspective of a very high-level view of how things kind of work in Office 365 MDM. Now, moving on, I'm going to focus I have lots of slides, by the way, and I'm probably going to skip a few slides because of time constraints. However, I put those slides in purely so that when you go back, you can actually go look through the presentation and understand any additional details. In addition, at the end of the deck, I also have a few example patterns of access controls with example policies using PowerShell, for example, with ADFS that I also have within the deck that you can also consume. Before I get started in more of the access control paradigms within ADFS, I'm kind of starting to drill down a little more. Let me give a very brief, quick perspective of the types of enhancements we did in Active Directory Federation Services in 2012 R2. Now, as I already talked about, the notion of really thinking about supporting the ability to recognize a device as a core notion within the directory itself, where we have these device objects as part of telling an Active Directory, saying that, hey, this is a device, and provisioning that device where we can provision a credential on the device as well as an object in the directory to provide, to be able to recognize the device. Similarly, we enhance a lot around user authentication, where we focused on adding more controls for multi-factor authentication, which I will be demoing some of our partners who kind of enable that within Active Directory Federation Services, as well as really thinking about single sign-on experiences, as well as enabling, for example, a simple thing when we think about BYODs is that what happens when my password is about to expire? How do we think about that? How can the users essentially change their passwords? So those are the types of functionality that we added around this area. Similarly, as we focused on BYOD, more and more people want to build these rich client applications that conform to a certain device form factor, and as a result have access through these standard, more of RESTful interfaces. To enable that application development within the enterprise, we enable support for OAuth, and we will continue to do that. You will see far more enhancements in the next version as well as part of Windows Server 10. We've worked a lot in terms of really thinking about continuing to improve our deployment areas as well, where we focus on, there are things that we did in terms of prior. How many of you know of Active Directory Federation Service, by the way? All right, that's quite a few. All right. Active Directory Federation Service has been there for a while. Previously, we relied on IIS, where people had challenges in some ways, in some cases, to configure certain things the right way. And what we've done a lot is to take out the dependency. But one of the key reasons why we did that was so that you could go install it even on a domain controller and co-locate it. It really doesn't matter because it is a core authentication service that we want to make sure that people can locate it, manage it in very similar ways if you need to. And we did not want to have IIS as part of that to enable that. Now, there's a series. You saw the quick access denied message screenshot earlier. And it's all about providing the right experience to end users when sign-in. So as we've provided a series of customization controls where you can just, instead of having to write code, you're just using JavaScript at this point in time to update aspects of the, or even very simple in some cases, you just update PowerShell to add a text, and then that shows up as the appropriate message. And finally, it's about conditional access control, where I'm going to drill down a lot more in this area for the rest of the session with demos to actually spend more time on that, so that you understand what are the types of capabilities that you have to secure that access across a wide variety of factors that I'd mentioned earlier. So let's get started with a few concepts. The first concept is essentially about the notion of workplace join. Workplace join is essentially very simple. It is about enabling Active Directory to recognize a device. It's about embracing the wide variety of devices. Now, what happens really during a workplace join experience? Oh, that looks like a really shiny neon green. So the first thing that we do as part of a join experience, and I'll demo this in very soon so that you have an understanding, but I wanted to give a little bit of a basis out here. The experiences that the end user supplies their login ID. Now, based on the login ID, we discover where can you, do you have the ability to essentially join to Active Directory, and we call this DRS as our device registration service. And so we discover, do I have that service available? Now, once that's available, we essentially authenticate the user. Now, within the authentication, we strongly recommend saying that please use multi-factor controls to actually do this process. Why? Because once we provision a credential for the device onto that device that is device-specific and in some cases is essentially resembles, think of it as a concept of device at user, where we have this tight binding to the user. Once we've done that, it is a great mechanism to really think about it as an augmented credential because I've got my user credential and I've got something that I have, which is the device. So it also provides a way to make this a very seamless, simple, multi-factor capability as well. Now, once we do that, we register the device. As part of registering the device, there are two things that we go do. One is we go create an entity for the device in Active Directory. It's a very, a lot of people ask the question, oh, is it just a computer account? No, it's not a computer account. It's different. It's a much more lightweight device object that we have within Active Directory where we extend the schema to support that, and we also support that in the cloud as well, where I create an object in the device. I also tell that within that object, it is associated with this user. In the cases of shared devices like Windows, we will create multiple of these objects that are mapped to each of the users because we have a separate user profile within Windows. Now, once we've registered and we added the device object, what we do is essentially provision a device certificate onto that device. Now, we chose using a device certificate in this way because it really works seamlessly for a lot of authentication steps because certificate authentication is a very common pattern. But for us, it was about representing the device at user and not just the user because then we can bind things like the user and the device to drive the right paradigms. Now, typically what you see today is that the end user authenticates, and as a result, you provide the access. What we're really trying to kind of move this towards is essentially where, hey, not only Irvin, the end user, is authenticated, but the device is also authenticated prior to providing access to the resource. That's the thing in a very simple way. There's a lot of benefits from this because when you think about really enabling internet-based access, this really takes the pool of all those internet endpoints and just reduces to say, it's those devices I know my users have registered, and so I have a better protection in terms of what type of access that I provide. Now, another core aspect of what we did as part of why we chose the device certificate was that now on Windows devices, we use this notion within the SSL protocol where we will say, hey, I'm giving you a hint that says it's from this issuer, give me a certificate associated with that. What happens as a result of it is that while it's totally oblivious to the end user that they're actually accessing with also with their device certificate behind the scenes. They don't have a selection experience. However, I've been told that iOS 7, and I've been also told that iOS 8, iOS 7 had an issue where you would see a prompt for the certificate, but iOS 8 essentially also fixed that prompt. As far as iOS 8 beta, I know, fixed it, so I don't know about iOS 8. In Android, you do see a certificate selection experience, which will show I'm using my organizational device certificates, and I select that, and as a result, I have an experience. So let's focus on how we think about the continuum, and there is one part of the picture that's also missing, and which is what we continue to kind of evolve in our next wave. So you range from an unknown device that you have no control over, where you can really limit that access. You can say no access, to actually bringing on and providing a next level of access where you potentially have partial control. And what we mean by partial control is essentially you get to say yay or nay for that device. So if a user reported that the device is stolen, you get to just go forward and say, okay, I'm not providing any more access from that device. And moving forward to what we say is a fully managed device for us in our world is a domain joined device. It has lots of controls in terms of how you manage, whether you manage through group policy or you manage through SCCM. So you have a lot of control in terms of managing that device and enabling access from that. What's missing in this picture is a column between the workplace joined devices and the domain joined devices. And we call these as managed devices. And managed devices may fall its own category, or it may fall closer to the domain joined category. Because with an MDM vendor, you would be able to assert control on the device, you would be able to evaluate compliant policies, and restrict access only to devices that are managed and are compliant with your business policies. Okay. Now, what I talked about in our workplace joint, I used a notion of a device registration service endpoint. This is available in Active Directory Federation services. But we also enable this as a cloud service as part of Azure Active Directory. What we've done there is that if you are a customer that is going to be hybrid, which implies that you have resources up in the cloud as well as resources on premises, and you want to do conditional access to both your cloud resources as well as your on-premises resources, we say use the Azure Direct Device Registration Service because, A, it's very tightly integrated. We provide a very end-to-end solution associated with that. It's also integrated well with our office as well as with Intune as well. And what you get to do as part of that is just your devices go up, you're creating the device in Azure Active Directory, and if you want conditional access to your on-premises resources protected by ADFS and the web application proxy, you can bring those devices back through what we call as device write back and enable that. So think of this clearly as if I'm a hybrid customer, go with Azure DRS, Device Registration Service. If I'm a purely an on-premises customer, we also provide that within the Active Directory Federation Service itself. Now, I've already kind of mentioned, it's really about protecting two authenticated devices and really limiting a wide pool of non-authenticated devices and reducing the surface area in terms of your access control. Another key thing in terms of a concept that I wanted to make sure that I brought up was the network location. Now, for us, network location is that you deploy what's known as the web application proxy in your DMZ, which essentially is a combination of being an authentication proxy for ADFS, as well as an application proxy where you can protect a bunch of application endpoints that live within your network. Now, as a result, you might have conditional access control across these device paradigm, user paradigm, MFA paradigm. But we also add the notion where because you're going through our proxy or you're coming, we know that you're coming from outside and we know what IP address you're coming from. And as a result, we provide that as data that you can write rules on to say, hey, do I allow access or not? So let's start working it. This is where I'm starting to kind of dig in a little more. The reason why some of you may think that this is 400-level content, but at the same point in time, given that this is a core security aspect, we want to make sure that people really understand what's going on and how we protect access to these resources. Now, I'm going to be walking you through what's the ADFS pipeline. Now, and walking you through how we do authentication, how we do authorization, to make sure that you understand what are the types of capabilities that are available to you so that you can secure access to these resources. The first portion is essentially about, is about our authentication and authorization. Think about this, it's a very simple way of saying that we support multitude of protocols for applications. It ranges from what we call as WS star protocols that we, Microsoft, probably have done a lot more, invested a lot more in it. It supports SAML authentication, which is a very common industry standard for these applications, or, and which I see quite prevalent in Europe as well, and the new, more modern RESTful protocols to handle authentication for RESTful services around OAuth. We take that, we normalize a lot there, and then essentially say, okay, let's be consistent about how we think about authentication and authorization. Now, the first portion is really about what's called as primary authentication. Now, our primary authentication, we split up authentication as two key steps. One is primary authentication, and then we do an additional authentication based on your first authentication context. So within that authentication context, we primary and device authentication, we both do user authentication and device authentication in one step. And as a result, once you've completed, and we know your context, we know John is essentially coming from an authenticated device. Then we go and decide, hey, based on the application, do I need John from his authenticated device to go do an additional authentication or not? And that is a very flexible control available to you to say, based on a per application notion, you can decide how to do that authentication. Once we say, do I need MFA is required or not, we complete that step and say, we finish that, and now we have a full context. We call this the authentication or the authorization context. Now we'd go to and decide on the right hand of the right side of the slide is essentially okay for this application, because it might be a sensitive apps. It might be an app that requires access only to a certain subset of users. Based on all that rich data about the user, device, location, you get to decide, do I want to allow access to that application or not? That's called our issuance authorization state. If you don't have access, we'll say, no, sorry, you don't have access, and we'll throw up an access denied message that I will also demo a little later on. Okay. Now let's dive in just a little more on this. What happens now in our primary authentication stage? What we say is that when we deliver essentially a page, we're already doing client TLS as an optional component there, with the hint saying that, hey, we know what the issue for our device certificates are, so let's go do a client TLS behind the scenes. So when we get that certificate back, if it's available, we actually go back to the directory and say, is this device enabled, valid, like, for example, not lost or disabled or deleted? So is it a valid device that we have within the directory? So yes. And then we do the user authentication. I might be using my username password, or I might even use user certificate authentication, or I might be using my standard Windows logged in context to log in the user. And once that is completed, we know the user as well, we've authenticated the user, and we see, okay, are these two things bound together? Is this device bound to this user? Why do we go do that? This is about really us enabling more seamless single sign-on experiences. Because if we know that this device is John's device, we can say, because we recognize it's John's device, we can give him a much longer-lived session to be able to give access to applications. That is why we do that binding. Now, once we, the next question is, how is this all governed by in terms of the policy? Now, how we think about the authentication policy is split up into two parts. It's really determined because we see customers that really differentiate in terms of what they want to do inside the network versus outside the network. So as part of that, we have a core aspect of saying, define what is my policy for internet access. Now, we support three modes. Right now, we support that you need to be using an Active Directory credential to do primary authentication for a user. And as a result, we support the standard Windows integrated authentication or integrated Windows authentication, where you can use your logged in context on a domain join machine to seamlessly authenticate to Active Directory Federation services. Now, or we support forms-based authentication, which essentially supports username password. There's also, as part of us as a sign-in experience, we also do a fallback to forms. Why? Because in cases where you have, let's say, an iOS device or an Android device inside your network that's accessing the resource, what we want to do is that not to pop up an NTLM dialog that looks a little weird for the end user. We want to kind of provide a nice, seamless forms-based user authentication where the user just enters the username and password into the credential. Or we also support certificate-based authentication for lots of enterprises that some are even passwordless orgs. For example, we have smart cards within Microsoft. I use that quite often. In fact, it's a virtual smart card that's tied to my TPM on my device. So that's driven out of certificate authentication. Now, finally, we also think about external access, and we think about device authentication as distinct policies. For outside the network, we support certificate authentication or forms-based authentication. Now, across both, whether you're thinking about inside or outside, we will support device authentication where so that we can recognize the device if it's inside or outside. And this is all available in our UI, where it's a simple checkbox, and I'll show that in my demo as well, on how that looks. Okay. Now, I'm just going to build this all out so that you can look at it. We have different ways of, like, really thinking about it's just reestablishing what I just mentioned in the previous slide, where we go decide based on the request, are you coming from inside or outside? Then we go fetch the policy that describes what's inside versus outside and actually perform the authentication at that point in time. Okay? Now, another core aspect for our securing access was we heard numerous customers come to us and say, hey, in the world of internet connectivity, yes, I get to use username passwords, but we are really concerned about whether I'm exposing myself to more DOS attacks or where brute force attacks in terms of someone's guessing the username password. Now, of course, always encourage your users to ensure that they have strong passwords because some of them can be really weak, and we see that quite often. And what we've added in 2012 R2 is the ability to really do a soft account lockout if we detect more than a certain threshold of bad passwords. So, for example, if I had more than 5 bad passwords in 30 minutes, then we will say if the request is coming from outside, we will not even do the authentication. We will drop the request. We won't go ask AD to authenticate. And as a result, we will also audit that information so that you can gather that and for future forensic analysis. It's super easy to set it up. There's only a couple of parameters. You set a threshold window, and you set an observation window that you want us to kind of look it up. All right, let me get onto my first demo. All right, I have a client machine out here. So let me log in into an app that I set up. So a quick point that I wanted to make is that this application is not a claims-aware app. It doesn't understand these standard protocols. It's a Windows-integrated application that was built on IIS. But what we've done with that web application proxy is to be able to intercept that request because I'm coming from outside the network, and be able to kind of say, hey, we're going to interject and say, we're going to apply all these access control aspects that so that you can provide controls, whether it's MFA or not. Now, what you see on the page out here is a very customizable experience. You have the ability to kind of put your company logo, an image. It's mobile aware. So as a result, you have a wide range of things that you can do to drive the right end user experiences. Now, right now, you see, because I'm coming from the extranet, this is a forms-based authentication. I mentioned that, hey, we support, like, forms and certificate, and I'm going to show you how we control that policy. Right now, I'm on the ADFS MMC snap-in. I have authentication policies, and what you can see is we have something for primary authentication, and you can see that I have, for my extranet, I actually... All right, and I can go edit, and right now I've only enabled my forms authentication for the extranet. Let me quickly show you what happens if I did this. I commit that change, and I'll go back to my client machine, and I'll just refresh the browser. What you now see is immediately I've provided another option that says that, hey, as a result, there's a couple of factors in here, because one of the things that we hear is that sometimes it's about user convenience. They might have one or both, and you'll see this in terms of our multi-factor as well. This becomes a choice. And this is a customizable message where, because I'm using smart cards, I haven't provisioned it in this environment, I've customized the message to say sign in using your smart card, because that's what my end users essentially know about. I'm going to continue to sign in. And what you can see now here is that we've taken a Windows integrated application, we've published it through the web application proxy, as a result, you are protecting that application with the type of controls that you can do. I'm not putting any big controls out right now. It's just an authenticated user. And I'll slowly work my way through adding more controls between MFA as well as doing more. Now, and just to show you exactly what it looks like, I'm going to see, what you can see out here is a simple Who Am I application with a bunch of data. And remember, the way we do this is about really exposing this as claims to admins so that they can make the access control. Now, what you can see out here is a rich set of claims. I know I authenticated with a password. I know I came from a certain IP address. I know I came from outside the network. I know, in this case, you don't see anything about devices. And once I do that, you'll probably see more claims showing up about devices as well. So that portion is this. Now, let me show you how we think about the workplace join that I really talked about. This is on a Windows, this device is a Windows 8.1 device that is not connected to my, that's not domain join. Now, within the network workplace settings, I have something called workplace join. So let me enter in. All right. I forgot my O. So what happened there is we tried to do device discovery. I did not have the right suffix for it, and that's why it said, hey, I don't have anything as part of doing that. So I added that. And type in my password. So I want to first talk about, now, remember I mentioned we strongly recommend using multi-factor authentication. In this case, I'm showing a place where within this environment, and I'll show a few more environments with multi-factor authentication, is that I'm going to use our Azure MFA to complete that join tradition. I could have used Azure MFA, or in our last decade in the US, we did a demo with login people, and we're going to do more demos with additional vendors later on in the session. So I'm going to do Azure MFA. And my phone is hooked up to that. Let me just resume. I'm using a Skype number right now. All right. It just
Thank you for using Microsoft Sign-In Verification System. Press the pound key to finish signing in.
And
you
that's
have been signed in. Goodbye.
As simple as that. It's calling my Skype on my desktop as well. But it was as simple as that where I'm using my phone to complete that verification where I have added an additional factor. This way, I know I can potentially consider a device, authenticated device, and an authenticated user as a MFA setting. Now, let's go back to that application and see what happens now. I'm going to sign in again. I'll go to the Who Am I app. By the way, these are two different apps. And once this is a single sign-on, essentially, where I can kind of go. Now, what you're going to see out here is that you've added, we've added a new section. Oops. Where you can now see more device claims. We know about the device because we just authenticated the device behind the scenes where we know that currently it's a device that's a Windows device and we have a build version as well as it was registered to John Doe in this case, but it's not currently managed. So that's the power in which now you are authenticating the device and getting access. So that concludes my first demo, and let me go quickly to my deck. Okay, we've completed primary device authentication. The next portion is really focusing on how we do multi-factor. So the way we think about multi-factor is whether your application is requested Active Directory Federation Service for multi-factor, or you're defining a global policy that spans across all your applications, or you have a per-application policy that says, I need to go multi-factor, we will combine all of those to decide whether you need to perform a multi-factor authentication. Now, It's a very simple way for you to actually go set up multi-factor authentication, where we give you a few basic things. Because one of the core concepts is that, for example, an application, you might say all app admins to that application require multi-factor authentication because they are privileged users. I want to make sure they essentially are proving themselves before I go do this. Now, when we essentially cannot perform multi-factor authentication, we will fail the request because that's what our policy said, and we will fail the request. Now, we have a lot more. I think I showed you these claim types. We have a core engine in which you can create more advanced policies based on your business need for governing this authentication. So at the bottom, for example, we actually have the fact that, like, apps built to AWS Trust, which is an active protocol, can't do multi-factor authentication because they're not built. The protocol is not built that way. So to make sure that you're really targeting these browser-based apps, that including rich client apps that use OAuth, we also added these notions of what that endpoint is so that you can say, based on what authentication endpoint that you're using, you can trigger multi-factor. So essentially, that is how you do additional authentication, where you can really go, I think I moved forward. Okay. Authentication across based on these types of authentication. Now, one of the key things that we saw in Active Directory Federation Service was it was very difficult to integrate any third-party multi-factor solution outside of just enabling cert authentication and smart cards, because that was inbox, because we just support whatever AD supports inbox. For us, it was really about continuing to enhance. We understand that customers have a wide variety of multi-factor solutions. And we want to make sure that customers can use their multi-factor solutions to provide the right set of strong authentication. With 2012 R2, what we did was that we introduced an SDK, where any vendor can essentially plug into ADFS to do multi-factor authentication. Or a customer can go build their own multi-factor authentication itself. We've seen that as well with some of our customers to go build because they already have an OTP on-premises solution or they have a security question answer. All of those can be handled using that API. What happens is that you can register a vendor with an ADFS, and the way we do that is it is all seamless and in line in terms of what your sign-in experience is. Because what we've seen a lot is that it's sometimes a very jarring experience for end users, and so we wanted to make sure that it looks exactly the same as their login page, but we are using a third-party system to essentially authenticate behind the scenes. So starting, we essentially introduced our adapter for Azure MFA, where you can establish an on-premises MFA server, and you saw me use my phone to actually go do this type of authentication. So I'm going to move forward to talk a little bit about our additional vendors. And I'm going to be demoing the first two vendors out there, which is Gemalto, whose representative we have here. We have Christian out there in front. As well as we also are going to do a demo with RSA. We have other vendors as well. More are on the way. We work with them across a wide variety of vendors. So I'm going to jump straight into my demo. And let me get something else. All right, the first demo that I'm actually going to go do is with Gemalto. So let me move to another environment. So I'm logging into a standard Office 365 site out here. And I already have deployed the phone application that provides OTP access onto my phone out here. And let me start that up so that I'm ready. This is a standard Azure Active Directory page. And what you're seeing is that this domain is essentially a federated domain. It's taking me to the ADFS server. And now I type in my password. So So what I'm doing here is I've already bound this device out there. So I already have a code that's coming up onto my, a one-time code that's coming onto my phone. And Gemalto has made it really simple where all I have to do is to push that code out where I don't even have to enter it. I can enter it manually, but all I have to do is essentially to go push. And once I did that push, as you can see, at that point in time, my authentication is completed because I'm also provided the one-time code, and now I have access to my resource, and I'm securely accessing this resource. So that is essentially where what you noticed was that it still is a very seamless experience within that ADFS login page, where Gemalto wrote an adapter that essentially works within the confines of that page, and it can do this and provide a flexible yet seamless and friendly user experience to end users. Now, we also support, Gemalto also supports, essentially, where I could have bound, if I'm using it for the first time and setting it up, I can essentially go through a process where I can, it's very simple for me to go set it up. In fact, I just used a snap it as a QR code to essentially go bind my device. Now I'm moving on to my next demo. And that's... I have another environment where I'm going to move on to an RSA demo where it's a very similar model. But here now I'm using a hardware token where most of the vendors essentially support both of these types of mechanisms where you could have essentially a hardware or a software token. But the nice thing is that irrespective of what you have this choice in terms of having the flexibility as an end user to ensure that we have the right level of access. I have a different account on this environment. So I am right now entering the one-time code that was out here. But I'm also entering in my a PIN that I know as well, in addition to that one-time code, that gives me additional security as well. And as you can see that I actually had a much secure access, and I'll show you one aspect of this. So you can see that we have these references. So you can see that ADFS is actually saying that, hey, I did multi-factor, which is the second claim that you see the value out there, and it also tells you what type of method that was used, which I'm using a one-time password, and this could be a wide variety. It could be a phone, it could be an SMS, it could be SMS code. There are lots of this flexibility for you to drive the right decisions. Okay, so moving forward, I'm going back to my PowerPoint. So we just, as I mentioned, the claim that you see in the arrow is really something that we kind of establish as saying, I've done multi-factor authentication. You can use it in your access control policies as well as drive fine-grained authorization based on that. All right, the final portions is really about restricting access based on issuance rules. Now, as I mentioned earlier, people want flexibility based on the type of application to control access based on this four set of factors we talked about, user attributes, device attributes, location awareness, as well as based on a per application basis, based on the application. So I'm going to focus a little more on the types of controls that we have. This is essentially an extension of what we've always supported in prior versions as well, where you have the ability, but most likely what you could do is essentially was you used user attributes. But with 2012 R2, what we've done is within our core engine, we've added a whole bunch of additional attributes, your device, your location, your user agent string. All of these are available for you to make the decisions. I can make a decision saying I only allow Windows devices or iOS devices to have access to this application. There's a lot of flexibility and control for you to do the right thing for based on what your requirements are. Now, in addition, what we did was people want to control the message that happens when you're denied access. Because let's assume a case where I only allow access for users in a certain security group. Now, you might want to tell the user, hey, go to X application to go add yourself to that group as part of a self-service step in terms of providing, enabling that user to gain access to the application if they are approved and authorized to go do that. So I'm going to jump in quickly into my next demo that showcases that within my environment. Okay. All right. So I'm going back into my ADFS console. I hope this works. Okay. So I'm still going to code for the relying party trust, which essentially establishes that it's my application. You saw my HTML application that showed all of these claims about the end user when I was logging in. And I click on the application. Oops. All right, let me go here. And I am going to edit the claim rules for it. All right. Okay, so my live zoom is not working, so let me go back. All right, so let's go back, try that out again. Okay, so what you see out here is essentially where we have aspects in which we can control what claims go to the application, but I'm going to select the issuance authorization rules, which gates the access control decision and the policy for who gets access. As you can see, right now I'm allowing everyone to have access, and I'll show you a very quick and easy way in which I can either use all these access control paradigms that we've enabled through our claims to make sure that we do the right thing here. So let me go add a rule first, and I'm going to say permit or deny users based on an incoming claim. And if I select that, and I click next, and let's say we're going to allow it only to a security group. And I'm going to name it the Demo ODC group. And it's as simple as saying it's the group claim, and we have the group SID. And what you'd see is that once I've said it's a group SID, we essentially have a browse button that immediately shows up so that I can pick up the group that I care about. And it's your standard object picker. I say yay, and permit access. Now, of course, I've got to remove my earlier rule out there, because that does say permit everyone. So let's go remove that so that I'm only permitting access to the demo ODZ group. So previously, John had access to this application. Now let's go see what happens as a result of it. So let's go to my Who Am I application and see what happens out here. Now you can see now John is blocked because he's not part of that demo ODC group. And as a result, we have an experience that focuses on telling John exactly what this is. This is a fully customizable experience where admins can customize what the right message should be when a user is denied access. And so now let's go try to go add John to the demo ODC group. I actually have a simple script for this, where I'm using AD PowerShell to essentially go add John to the demo ODC group. Now, all I'm going to do right now is refresh. And as you can see out here, once I added John to the demo ODC group, even though John had single sign-on, we go make sure that John is most up-to-date with his security groups, and as a result, we now know that John is part of the demo ODC group, and we're providing access. Now, I can do this across a wide variety of factors. All these claims that are available are essentially available for you to drive those decisions in terms of access control. There is another aspect in terms of providing issuance authorization. Sometimes the directory data may not be sufficient for you to drive the right access control decisions. We have extensibility points within Active Directory Federation service where you can write a custom adapter that goes, looks up your HR database for a certain attribute. Let's assume that you had a certain level of access that's not in the directory but is in another database. You have the ability to essentially write your own piece of code, plug it in using our API system as well as extensibility points so that you can go fetch that data prior to you making that decision for conditional access control. So I just wanted to highlight it is a powerful capability so that you can drive the right set of requirements and push that into us. Now, one of the things that a lot of our customers have also said is, it is powerful, but sometimes it's a little harder to use because I have to learn this claims language to essentially do the right decisions. Now, I want to say that in the next version of ADFS, which is Windows Server 10, you will see us making more advancements in which we will provide these higher-level paradigms for policy control, and where you can create a template, you can attach it to multiple apps because some of these applications essentially share a very similar kind of access control policy, so we will be enabling this so that it looks nice and pretty in the UI. Where we do have UI, but some of the more and clauses that you want, you probably want to go back into PowerShell and use our claims language to essentially drive the right access control decisions. So, let me move back to my deck. So, a very quick perspective of what that pipeline looks like. I'm not going to walk my through because I've already explained most of this, where this is mainly slides so that you just kind of know what's happening along the way, where we start with the first device authentication. Then we, based on the primary authentication, which combines user and device, based on that context, we decide on a per application basis, do you want to do additional authentication with a wide variety of multi-factor vendors that we have support for, as well as once that's happened, we then decide, based on access control, to say, hey, are you allowed access to this application before we provide a token that will allow access to that application? So that's a very quick view into how our entire system works to drive the appropriate security controls that you need when accessing applications and how to control them. So I'm going to recap a little bit in terms of, we think about this as about users, devices, as well as applications, and in addition to thinking about access. So in terms of resource, there's a set of capabilities. We provide network location awareness so that we can drive the right authentication. This is, you saw that as part of me enabling that extranet authentication policy and showing how that worked. And similarly, one more capability that we added is that you saw all of these nice single sign-on benefits where I kind of jump between applications. But in some cases, for sensitive apps, you want to say, hey, it doesn't matter if it's single sign-on or not. I want to force the user, it's a sensitive application where they are forced to provide a credential all the time, just ignore any SSO, and I might be combining that with multi-factor to make sure that every time they access that application, they have to provide a credential. Those are for super sensitive applications. All you as an admin need to do is tick a checkbox within the application, and we will go do that for you. Irrespective if you have a single sign-on session for you, we will say, sorry, this application requires you to provide fresh credentials, so you need to go do that. And that might be combined with multi-factor. You saw the fact of saying that I can really protect my, you saw those claims about devices, which gave me the ability to kind of protect my resources to only authenticated devices, as well as I showed you how multi-factor authentication also works, as well as thinking about how to control access using users and groups. Now moving on to devices, we support the ability where, even though you do workplace join, if you went and reported your device is lost and stolen and disabled that device entity in the directory, we will stop single sign-on. We will, if that device is still trying to authenticate, we will block all access as well as audit that information so that you can essentially understand, hey, where is this device? You have IP address information. There's so many things that we have as part of our audits to make sure that you have more data to actually go do the right things. Similarly, now the aspect of our workplace join is that this is an evolution where once we've established a common device entity, just like how we do with users and computers in Active Directory, you have the ability for an MDM vendor, like we've started with Intune, where you can augment that device object and say, this device is now managed and it's compliant or it's not compliant. Now, this provides you a common way to really think about how you drive the right security access across a wide variety of applications. Whether that application is an AD trusted application like Office 365 or the thousands of SaaS applications that we have up in the cloud protected by Azure Active Directory, or the on-premises applications, claims aware applications protected directly by ADFS, or non-claims aware, that Windows integrated application that I showed about, that essentially provides a way to take all of these applications, drive these consistent access control points for you to go make, use multi-factor authentication in a consistent manner. Now, there's another capability that we do have is that, like, internally when we developed it, we call it the hammer feature. But this is about some broad breach within the organization. You can say, disable, like, you're resetting passwords across a bunch of users. You can say, disable SSO for everyone that was ahead that had authenticated earlier than a certain time period. This gives you the ability to say in one go, say, okay, I'm asking users to provide fresh credentials across all their applications, whichever application that they access, in terms of being able to restrict access at that point in time. And finally, we also talk about from a perspective of really thinking about, hey, I really protecting even that AD credential with extranet lockout to kind of secure access. And this is not just about securing access, the application. It's about securing that user credential itself with that extranet lockout. And similarly, protecting accounts, why, for example, an app admin requires MFA to essentially access the resource, where we are really continuing to protect those users, those privileged users, and making sure that they are using multi-factor authentication to provide and get access to resources. So that concludes my presentation today. We have a few sessions. I wanted to kind of call out, again, the Office 365 session that focuses on Office 365 MDM. And we also have a more in-depth Azure Active Directory Premium that talks about a little bit of this as well, and some of our upcoming functionality. Now, before I end, I'll talk a little bit, give you a brief glimpse about what's coming for us in Windows Server 10. What you'll see is a few areas of investment. The first we've already announced. Previously, ADFS only authenticated Active Directory domain service users. What we've done is that we've added support for any LDAP v3 compliant directory, where you can authenticate users from any LDAP v3. So this could be an Oracle database, this could be a virtual directory, this could be a wide variety of directories that we have, including ADLDS as well. So that's one area of investment. Now, for those who are a little more developer-focused as well, what ADFS is also doing is that we also become the core authentication hub for Windows Azure Pack. So if you're building a private cloud and apps based on that private cloud and ensuring end users access to those applications, then we essentially, all those benefits that we do, including a series of protocol enhancements around OAuth and OpenID Connect, you will see us essentially providing that functionality and in the upcoming previews that you'll probably be able to go see that. Similarly, I briefly mentioned, we've improved our notion of management capabilities where we, like our policy management, is going to get more UI and is going to get more fancier in terms of using templates and finding easy ways to create these templates and attach it to the application in terms of what type of access controls that you want to do for that. Subsequently, we're making a series of deployment investments as well on continuing to simplify some of the deployment paradigms, enable you to do that. One of the key pieces of feedback that we've heard for customization within ADFS is that, and I've seen this in a lot of Europe as well, that people have these service vendors, they've become these service vendors, they're using ADFS that reaches out to different B2B organizations, and they want to customize the login experience based on the application and not based on the organization. Because that's what we focused on in 2012 R2, kind of providing a consistent organization view. So you'll see us give you more control in terms of being able to customize the experience based on the application that's being accessed so that you can brand the application or the service that you, the end user, is trying to access. So those are some few things. There's many more that I probably can't talk about some of them, so I'm just giving you a brief glimpse into things that I can talk about, and you'll see that continuing to evolve in terms of the next, being able to support newer paradigms, improve protocol support, enable some of our Windows 10 initiatives, which you saw a little bit in our keynotes, and kind of provide that comprehensive experience where our goal is that it doesn't matter whether you have an app up in the cloud protected by Azure Active Directory or a service, or an app on-premises protected by ADFS, we give you this consistent way in terms of thinking about an IND control plane, enabling access control and providing that flexibility for you to secure access to your resources. So that concludes my session, of course. You know, please do, and we're just about out of time. So please do, this is the QR code for this session. Now I'm gonna stay here for few more minutes to answer questions, so please drop by. I don't want to hold you on for, delay your lunch session, but I am going to be available at Ask the Experts this evening. So if you want to have detailed questions, we can always get onto the whiteboard and walk through what your scenario is and try to understand in terms of how we get to a solution for that. Hope you enjoy the session. Thank you very much.